Hello and welcome to the Dusty Dreams Podcast, aka Life in Hex.
I'm Sephron.
And I'm Gelada.
And we're going to take some cool stuff.
Indeed, it's a little podcast. This is our first episode. We had a bit of a pilot episode which kind of went wrong.
Episode zero.
Maybe we'll release that one day.
We should release that, I think, once we get big, everyone can start laughing at how bad we were.
When we got like 50 episodes. Like,
and we're amazing.
Yep, or not.
If that happens. Yep. Anyway, let's jump straight in.
Yeah, basically, we'll just give an outline on what we're going to do. It's kind of a bit of gaming, bit of tech, bit of life, bit of random crap, bit of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that we tend to go off on tangents a lot of the time, so be prepared for us to just drift off topic sometimes.
Yeah, and try and ignore the dodgy cuts when we cut bits out.
We shall try.
Yeah. Little introductions. I'm Gelada. I'm Gelada of Dusty Dreams, which is where this is.
Dusty Dreams, yep. On the Dusty Dreams site. So
.co.uk.
.co.uk, yes. .co.uk. Not .com.
And you are?
I'm Sephron.
Some random person off the street.
I am some random person off the street. He just pulled me in and I'm being held at gunpoint right now. No, I'm not really. I'm one of the Jal's best mates, I would say.
Yep.
Yeah. We've known each other for quite a long time.
It's been quite a while.
We're into podcasts right now. Yeah. Since the podcast craze. So yep. We thought we'd do one.
Indeed. Else. Just like a bit of random nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll jump straight in with some gaming news. Revolution apparently is going to launch in spring, which probably won't happen. It'll probably be pushed back
a bit further.
So, Revolution launches in autumn.
Well, no, this is for America.
Indeed.
By the way, people, we are coming to you from England, if you hadn't already guessed from our accents.
Yep. We don't speak American.
We're not American. We're proud to be English. So, for all you Americans, Revolution's probably going to come in spring. Well, that's what...
Hopefully a bit later.
Hopefully a bit later.
Maybe it'll come here first.
It would be a first. It would definitely be a first if that was the case.
Yep.
It's been told that Revolution's going to come out in spring, so hopefully around that kind of area.
Yep. This was according to some financial report that Nintendo released, and someone evidently leaked it.
Obviously so. But isn't that always the way?
Indeed.
What would you do without leaks?
But... that will be pretty cool, I think.
I'm looking forward to the Revolution.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping to have enough money after upgrading my computer and keyboards and things.
I won't have enough money to upgrade my computer, but I will have enough money to buy my Revolution.
Indeed. And next bit.
Okay, moving straight on. Advance Wars Dual Strike. This game came out, I'd say, a few weeks ago now.
Something like that.
It's a Nintendo DS game, and it's based on the Advance Wars series, which originally came out on the... Game Boy Advance.
Yep, I'm going to claim ignorance here because I've hardly ever played them.
You like the look of it, but you never actually really played any of the Advance Wars games. And Advance Wars is a turn-based strategy game where you take turns to move your units around the screen,
yep,
and shoot each other and, you know, try and beat your opponent. It's set in basically like nowadays type of technology. You have like men with infantry, you go guns and tanks and missiles.
But it isn't actually real life based in the
The setting is totally fantasy based. It's like set in Omega Land and Macro Land. And
yeah.
It's called War World, so it's nothing serious. It's all like fun stuff.
I mean, is there a great big storyline? Is there anything?
There's a kind of storyline which is only there so they can say that there's a storyline.
Yeah.
It's about an army called the Black Hole Army, which is like the evil army, which is always trying to invade different countries, and then the other countries have to like band together and try and beat them back. That's the basic story.
So it sounds basically like we better stick a story in so that it's not completely everywhere.
Yeah, but no one really cares about the story. I mean, after you finish the campaign, which doesn't take you too long. I mean, I'm about, I'd say, a quarter through it already.
Mm-hmm.
After you finish the campaign, you will be playing it just on all the different war maps that you can buy. But anyway, I'm just going to do a quick review of the game. In terms of graphics, it's barely changed from the actual Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah, I mean, I had a quick look at this, and it looked, you know, they'd changed the view a bit on the map.
It used to be completely top-down, right? And it's still almost top-down, but it's at a slight angle, so everything has this little angle to it. Which
they've
makes
added
it
a third dimension to it.
Slightly 3D.
Yeah.
But not a lot.
But you've still got 2D sprites, basically.
It's all 2D sprites, yes. But, so apart from that, the graphics are pretty much the same, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. They look pretty good. Certainly the little cutscenes with the fights and everything, it's good to have that.
That's another thing, yes. When your units begin to fight each other, when you move into the attack, or you move into to perform an action, you get a little cutscene which is a lot more advanced in terms of graphics, and you see for one side is your men, so from right or left depending on where you're attacking from, it's relative. Mm-hmm. You will see your men attacking something else.
And also, the backdrop is related to where you are.
That's also right. So say your men are hidden in a forest, which gives them extra cover, you will have a forest behind you. Whereas so the other men might be in a city or on a road, you will see either a road or a city.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it adds that little bit of detail which just makes the game feel nice.
Yeah. What would you say about the game engine, you know, how it plays? It's turn-based, obviously, so...
Well, a lot of people don't like turn-based games compared to, like, the big trend in real-time strategy games.
Yeah.
But this really works simply because it's on a handheld console.
Yeah, so far I've never seen a successful real-time strategy game.
No, not really.
On any handheld.
The only successful RTS game I've ever played on a handheld console was a game called Mech Assault, which is based around assault mechs. Mm-hmm. And it is real-time strategy on we're using your D-pad, so it's not that easy to do.
No.
But it does work quite a bit. It's a bit boring, it's a bit slow-paced, but it's not a bad game.
I mean, they're going to release Age of Empires for the DS, and
really?
That's going to be turn-based.
Oh, right.
So I don't think Ensemble Studios are actually making it. I think someone's just bought the name.
Okay.
But apparently that's going to be quite interesting. But yeah, so back to Advance Wars. It's turn-based.
Which plays really well, surprisingly. You'd think, oh, it's a very slow game, but it's not, because your units move quite fast. There's not, if you don't want to see the cutscenes, say, you know, I know what's going to happen, the cutscene, just want to click through it quickly, you can just click on screen, and the cutscene will go back away, and you can continue with the map.
Yeah. What about the whole commanding officer thing that I've never fully understood?
You take control of any CO that you have available to you, your commanding officer, right? And each commanding officer, CO, has their own special abilities. For example, using the original game, the very first Advance Wars, you had three COs that you could control in the Orange Star Army. Mm-hmm. And they were Andy, Max, and Sammy. Mm-hmm. Now, Andy was an all-rounder. He was like the person who had no advantages or disadvantages. And Max specialised in frontal assaults with tanks and vehicles. And Sammy was an infantry CO.
So basically they provide certain, it's almost like in some games you have like nations or something like that. They provide little advantages, little disadvantages in the game.
Yeah, that's right. For example, like Max, he specialises in frontal assault and tanks, which makes his indirect units, like his artillery and his rockets, suffer because they're a lot less powerful and the range isn't as good.
Right. So, do they have some sort of special abilities or something, don't they?
Yes, you have what's called a CO power meter, and then as it charges up, you can use the CO special power. And the first special power, which is the normal power, gives you a certain advantage. For example, Andy's original power was to repair all these units on the field with two hit points, which is really useful in battles.
So basically they sort of give that extra edge, rather than instead of you sort of throwing units at each other, you've got that extra edge that you can suddenly throw in this complete...
It can turn the tide of
the
battle.
Completely turn the tide of battle.
But one thing that's been added in the new game, this Advance Wars Dual Strike, is you can use two COs at once.
All right.
And it's a thing called CO swap. Mm-hmm. And you can swap between COs at the end of your turn. So you can have two COs commanding the army, so you get the advantages of one or the other, depending on your situation.
Yeah.
For example, say you've got a lot of indirect units, but you've also got a lot of tanks. You want your indirect units to attack the enemy units before they get to you. You choose, say, Grit, who's very good to his long-range units.
Yeah.
And then when the units get a bit closer and you need to do some frontal assault, use your CO swap and get Max, and he will be able to take on the tanks a lot more effectively.
I see. So that's sort of more strategy.
So it makes you think more.
Yeah.
But at the same time, both of them still get their power meter. And as it builds up, you can have their power, their superpower, but if you wait till both of them get maximum amount of power on the CO meter, you'll get what's known as tag power, where both of them use their superpower at once and allow you also to have two turns at once. So you can move your units into position with one turn, and then you swap COs, and then that CO can then order more commands.
So, yet again, you're adding that extra layer into the game that makes it, you know, you can pick it up and play it, and you can play a quick game and end a story, but you can actually really learn some in-depth strategies and ideas.
You can do, and people don't think, oh, you can't have like strategy with turn-based, because it's just like you can sit there and think for ages.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of strategy to it,
I mean, I've played a little bit of Civilization, and I know some people who will have a whole weekend dedicated to a single Civilization game, and they will play a hot seat game. So they will be round, you know, one person's house who has the game, and they will stay for the weekend, and they will take hot seat game of Civilization. And it works really well, because you can, you know, if at any point you want to go and have some food, you don't need to pause it and worry about things going wrong, because it's turn-based. You can just stop.
That's right, yeah. Which is another good point of Advance Wars, and about this on the DS system. Whenever you need to stop, you can just close the lid,
yeah,
and it will pause it. And unlike all real-time strategy games or first-person shooters or whatever you're playing, as soon as you open the lid, like, it starts again. It doesn't have to worry about that. You just said, yeah, you can come back to it, and it's still as
it's
it
exactly
was.
Where it was, and you can go away and think about it or anything like that.
The one aspect I will say about the game, one of the newest aspects to it, apart from the CO swap ability,
yeah,
is the fact that you can control, if you want to, two armies at once.
Yeah,
two different armies.
I heard of this, but didn't really quite understand what the hell it was.
Basically, in the original two games on the Game Boy Advance, you only had, obviously, one screen.
Yeah.
So you could only control one army.
Yeah.
Although sometimes you did have two armies on the same screen, but you took it in turns to control them.
I see.
This time, however, because there's two screens, you can swap between the two screens with two different armies. Now, for example, you could have a land-based army comprised of, say, the Orange Stars, and then you could have an airborne army mm-hmm. comprised of the Blue Moon. And then after you finish your turn on the ground, you can then switch to your turn in the air. And you can also do it so that either the computer will take care of the second front, which is known as the second front, which is the air.
Yeah, I get you.
Or you can do it yourself. I wouldn't suggest ever using the AI.
No,
because
it's probably
kind of rubbishy. You can't really think. I mean, you can switch its modes. You can have defense, you can have strike, and you can have assault. But if you choose any of them, they kind of like mess about and they get totally slaughtered.
But this is another thing that you can really only have in a turn-based game, because you would never have the time to control two armies in a real-time strategy.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't at all.
So yet again, another layer of strategy you can add to the game.
So, I mean, to be honest, I can't think of a bad thing about the game. Mm.
What would you say about the AI of the opponent when you're playing in the campaigns or something like that?
There's no settings, so all the AI, one setting.
So it's sort of predetermined, you know, the level that they think.
But it's obvious early on in the game's made easy for you. Because
so basically, it's a gradual.
The landscape's in your favour, the units you begin with are in your favour. But there are some maps where neither of you start off with any units, you have to build up your army and then attack like that. And sometimes the AI can be quite ruthless. It can really hit you hard.
It sounds pretty good. I think I'm going to be getting this, because then we can play wireless, of course.
You know Pac-A-Mac? Mm-hmm. He will also be buying that.
Oh, excellent. So we could have how many
you can have up to eight people playing at once.
Up to eight people. So we could have like a three-way game with all three of us playing.
Or we could work together.
Yeah.
For example, us two, me and, you know, Sefren and Gelada, could control one land-based army between us and use CO swap, whereas Pac-A-Mac could then take control of an airborne army or a seaborne army. So
there's lots of opportunities for different modes of play. You know, you could play cooperative or against each other, CO swap, dual screen, dual army things.
I'll also add that they've added some new modes to it as well. You've got things that's called combat mode and survival mode.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't played survival mode yet, but combat mode allows you to do is control a single unit yourself real time. And you've got to go around blasting stuff, basically.
Yeah.
It's very rudimentary, and it's not very well done. But it's a bit of fun.
Mm.
And it's the only one you can do with single cart download play.
All right.
You have everything else, like all the normal turn-based battle, you've got to have. Each player has to have a cart.
I see. Well, it'll be quite interesting. I think I'll be investing in that. My DS hasn't been played a lot recently, so it needs to be.
This is the first game that I've played. This is the first time I've played a DS game on my DS for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've played Yoshi Touch and Go, but that's the last game
it's
I bought.
Just a pick up and play game that you can't really play for a very long time. Out of 10, I'd give Advance Wars Dual Strike an 8.5 or a 9.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the sound can get a bit repetitive because it's the same music over and over again.
Yeah.
And there's no voices.
And the graphics haven't changed much.
Graphics haven't really changed that much. But then again, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Exactly, yeah, I would say. And the playability is the important thing. You can just keep going and going forever.
Yeah, you could do. I mean,
look at Age of Empires 2.
Yeah,
we still play Age of Empires 2.
I reckon in a year or two time, I'll be picking that game up and having a quick game.
Yeah.
Or I might like pick up on a big game, which is taking me a couple of weeks to play. Yeah. It's got a lot of longer last ability.
Good. Okay, so what have we got next on the old little listy thing?
You're going to talk about Day of Defeat Source.
I am. I haven't played it a lot much to my clan's annoyance, but I purchased through Steam. Lots of people whinged about Steam when it first came out. Lots of people were saying, oh, you know, oh, this isn't working, that isn't working, I've got errors, it's a pain having to unlock everything. It's really quick.
I like Steam.
I like Steam. They've upgraded it a bit now. They're changing the interface. Looks a bit more bloated, but we'll see what they're going to do about that.
Yeah, it's still kind of in the beta stages, this new interface.
But yeah, I found it really easy. Just, it's a case of putting in your details. Hello, you've got Day of Defeat Source in like an instant, you know.
Yeah, dumb.
I can't see how anyone can complain about it.
I think companies such as like EA should do this with all their games, where they're available to download.
Yeah, because EA, I mean, they've bought loads.
EA has so many games.
And they do loads of online stuff as well. You know, they used to do, you know, they've been incorporated with stuff, and they've done... They wanted to do Sims Online and all this sort of thing. Well, so.
Exactly. I mean, and if they made it available to through a thing called like Steam, then it'd be a lot more accessibility.
And they'd get a lot more... I mean, it must be a huge money... You know, it must be one of Valve's major sources of income, because obviously you can go out and buy the game, but there's some things that you can only get on Steam, and it's great.
Of course. Anyway.
And it guarantees you a lot of purchases as well, because lots of people... preloaded Half-Life 2. You know, it's like, oh my god, Half-Life, you know, the moment people were preloading it so that they could play it the instant it came out.
It's also cheaper. Than buying it from a shop.
I mean, it cost me, let's see, basically it cost me $23.44. So that's what,
£15?
£15. £15 for a game that, in my opinion, is a good game.
And in the shops you pay like £30 for it.
Yeah, if you were going to... If I don't even know whether you can buy it.
You can't buy Day of Defeat Source in the shops. For example, Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
That cost you, I think it cost you something like $30 to $35 off Steam. That's the gold package. You get a lot of other extras with that.
Yeah,
as well.
You get... I mean, you do actually get a Day of Defeat Source if you buy
the gold package.
If you get the gold package, I swear you get, you know, Counter-Strike, Day of Defeat Source, you know, you get all this stuff. So.
Well, there you go. I mean, you can pick that up for about, I think it's like between $30 or $40.
And when it came out, you could get a biscuit tin.
Really?
Yeah, they were selling these little aluminium tins with a t-shirt in and everything. It was pretty good. But yeah, okay, moving on to the game itself.
Go on.
Obviously, Source Engine, pretty good. Day of Defeat originally was a mod, a bit like Counter-Strike started as a mod, so Day of Defeat also started as a mod, and Valve were like, hey, we want this, take it over. It's set in World War II. There's... What else can I say? I really haven't played it a lot.
In the gaming style, it's very similar to Counter-Strike.
It is. It's very similar. I mean, in my opinion, it's Counter-Strike crossed with BF2, set in World War II.
I agree.
There's flag capturing, which is BF2, but there's quick rounds, aka Counter-Strike Source. You know, it really is an amalgamation of Counter-Strike Source and BF2. So if you like both of those games, it's a good game to play. You have certain sets of weapons, so you have like assault, rifleman, support, that sort of a thing. They're all fairly equal, but overall, the spread isn't very varied in a huge amount. Yeah. You know, the rifleman is very similar to the sniper rifle, and the assault is very similar to the support.
They all have advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, they do. The game now has high dynamic rendering, the whole big lighting effects and things, which is quite nice. I haven't seen it a lot. They've only got three or four maps, which is a real downer. People have been complaining that they've only got four maps, but... No doubt they will either release more, which is what they usually do.
Of course they will.
Or people will...
More mods and...
People will make their own. Valve will then take them. I've got a Half-Life 2 book, and if you look in there, they've got a section about Counter-Strike, and it tells you that, you know, almost all of the maps have been written by people, and then they've just, in the next version, they've been taken up and become part of the actual game.
Yeah.
There's a few bugs, which they really need to sort out.
And the one I noticed most when I played it was the movement collision detection.
The hitboxes are really good, I've heard. You can actually shoot between someone's legs and you will shoot through their legs.
Oh, that's good.
But when you're actually walking around, it's noticeable in Counter-Strike Source as well, but I think it's actually more noticeable in Dead
Feet.
A lot
more noticeable.
When you are near someone, you basically stop moving. You can't move while you're near someone. I've been stuck... I've only played it, you know, altogether probably an hour if you put everything together, but already I've had about two or three times when I've been stuck and can't move, and we've either been forced to shoot each other or jump and crouch and do lots of movements, and eventually we break free. So I would say that's a real problem that needs to be solved. Maybe they'll solve that in a patch, maybe hopefully. They won't. I'm sure they will, but that's the main downer. I would say also, not enough maps that they need to sort out, but the maps are good. people are really are playing almost as they play Counter-Strike. You know, there's lots of cubby holes and there's places where you can jump out onto window ledges and snipe from. People are working out the maps. It's just taking a lot, you know, it's taking quite some time.
One thing they did change from it was no bunny hopping.
Yes, in Counter-Strike Source, lots of people have mastered jumping around a corner, sniping with an AWP and shooting someone in the head, which in real life you would never be able to jump around a corner and shoot someone in the head.
But they got rid of that in Day of Defeat.
In Day of Defeat, when you jump, A, it slows you down, and B, you lose the ability to shoot. You know, it just makes your gun disappear, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is good. I think that will definitely help stop people being frustrated when they join the game and there's people that can just jump around corners and shoot the crap out of you. So I would say that's definitely a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Out of 10? I would have given it a 7.
Yeah, 7 or 8. I'd say around there, actually. Yeah, maybe a 7. It's good. Lots of people are playing it. I can imagine it once it stabilises, once they fix some bugs, get some new maps, it will be a good game. But at the moment, it really does feel like it's in an early stage. It almost feels like it is a homemade mod.
Yeah.
It really doesn't feel like this has been made by Valve.
But, of course, it's brand new.
Yeah.
There'll be patches and stuff, so it'll get better.
It will, I'm sure it will. Okay, moving on. We're now away from the gaming. That's our little gaming patch.
Yeah, we'll do it in sections, and now we're going to move on to a bit of tech.
Yep. Starting with... you, in fact, doing paper-thin TVs.
Yes, I saw this article on the internet about these TV screens, these plasma TV screens, which are so thin, they're practically like paper.
And so you can basically roll them up.
You can roll them around, and they will have... They can't... like they're not like TVs, so they can't like be broadcast
yeah.
to, and they can't receive data. It will just be a continuous loop of something. But the idea of this is that you're going to have these screens inside newspapers.
Yeah, and magazines.
And magazines, and all kind of paper media. So basically, you can have something, for example, like in the Harry Potter movies, you know, when you have the newspapers moving, and you have moving
yeah.
images of it, you're going to have something like that.
Yeah, that would be... I can imagine it being really cool. This has been... happening. People keep unveiling this technology. This is some this is Siemens, actually.
This is Siemens, this one we've got up.
I remember reading that Panasonic have done something like this. I'm sure Sony must have done something like this.
Probably.
You know, they all keep doing these things and so far they haven't taken off. But apparently it won't actually cost a lot to make.
It's very cheap. I don't know how they've done it, but they've got it, so it's so very cheap to make these rolls.
I mean, it will take a while, probably, before it actually gets cheap enough to use for everything, but they say that it's actually economical to actually use this wherever we've used paper so far.
Well, it actually says here that the Siemens spokesperson said that 1 square meter of this material, this moving paper basically, mm-hmm. will cost around £30.
Yeah.
And you think about how much a TV would cost to the same size.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple of £100.
Yeah. I would say the other thing is that you've got to think that newspapers may be loads of sheets of paper, and you think, well, 1 square meter, you know, that's only a couple of sheets of, you know, like 4 or 5 sheets of paper.
But you're not going to have it all over the entire page.
Well, not just that, but you're only going to have
a small bit.
One sheet.
Yes.
Because if you imagine ebooks, ebook is effectively one sheet in theory,
yes.
and you press a button and it flips to the next sheet.
Yeah.
Well, all you need is one sheet of this paper because you can flick it over to the next sheet.
That's another medium that they could incorporate with this.
Yeah.
Instead of having piece of paper with this inside it, you could have entire newspapers made out of this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You could maybe go to your local shop and plug it in and download the latest paper.
Yeah, I would think, because the one, I'm sure it was Panasonic or someone like that, the one that they'd unveiled, it actually rolled out of this tube and it was touchscreen and you could actually press and it would flick the page over. And I would say that you could easily incorporate into something, you know, into this sort of thing to get your newspaper every day.
So something in the future which will definitely be very entertaining, very interesting.
Yeah, I would say it'd be good.
We have a tiny URL for it, so if you want to go and check it out
yes,
yourself.
Yes, it is tinyurl.com/E26UA. That's E for...
Epsilon.
Epsilon, one of them. I don't know the... Maybe we should... Our homework, learn the phonetic alphabet.
Yeah, we'll do some homework for you.
Yes, so it's E26UA.
Okay.
Moving on to the next one, it is AOL bought weblogs, and that basically means that they bought Engadget, which is a huge technological blog read by millions of people. They do their own podcasts, which I don't particularly like, but they are a big Engadget do a lot, and it's been purchased for a lot of money. It's like $25 million or something.
Is it really that much?
It really was a lot. I mean, good, lucky whoever it is that, you know, the executive of weblogs who have earned all this money from AOL.
They're sitting there rubbing their hands together.
Yeah, I would say it's an interesting purchase from AOL, which compares very nicely with our next news story, because they have bought this, which means that they're effectively going to be able to control it.
Yes.
Whether they say that they do or not, or whatever.
Another matter.
Yeah. So, and they reckon bring Engadget, and there's something like 90 blogs or something on that weblogs run. AOL say that it will bring a larger audience to weblogs, because people from, you know, AOL have a huge user base.
Unfortunately.
Lots of people who aren't very good with computers, but it will bring these people into weblogs. It will bring these people into Engadget and all this sort of thing.
I can see the advantages of it.
I would say that homegrown journalism is really taking off.
Definitely.
And this is just a sign of it. If AOL are spending $25 million in cash for weblogs, then it just shows that how much that homegrown journalism really is taking off.
But that moves nicely onto our next topic.
It does indeed, which is that Yahoo added blogs to its news section. Now, I thought this was really interesting. They do the same sort of thing as Google. You know, if you go onto news.google.com, you get this sort of collaboration of all these news sites with the latest news, and it's one of the best ways to check news quickly, up to date.
Yep.
You know, 28 minutes ago, such and such posted this. Really up to date. Yahoo do their own, obviously, in competition with Google, but they've actually put blogs side by side with news. Now, I think this is a good contrast between AOL and Yahoo and what they've done. AOL have bought the blogs, and Yahoo are using the blogs in their situation rather than actually buying them. You know, they haven't gone, right, we're going to buy some blogs and put them into our system. They're actually, you know, supporting bloggers, if you like, and saying, here's an extra. You know, we value what you're writing, because they really have. I mean, you know, the Live 8 concert, there was a huge amount of blogging on that, and there were loads of people, first-hand experiences, really up-to-date information. People were blogging while they were there off their phones, you know, and sending pictures onto the web. It's a really, bloggers really are on the forefront. They can really give up-to-date stuff. So I can understand why Yahoo have done this, and I would expect Google to do this very soon. I would think someone at Google, some engineer at Google in their 10% of time is going to be doing exactly the same. It's going to be doing exactly the same. Oh my God, we've got to get blogs on news site. So it won't be long, and then they'll be doing the same.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to that. I mean, I'm looking forward to the Yahoo adding blogs. Well, they already have them, but I'm looking forward to that, seeing how that works.
How that pans out, how they do it, and whether it becomes the norm. You know, never know, Microsoft might do the same thing.
You can check out those two stories as well, because we've done some tiny URLs.
We have indeed.
The tiny URL for the AOL buying web blogs is tinyurl.com E2FA5.
And the one for the Yahoo adding blogs to its news section was tinyurl.com/8SQJD. That's 8SQJD.
Okay.
How nice of us to do these tiny URLs for you.
We're so good to you, aren't we?
We are. Okay, now we're on to our little bit of life. We've done gaming.
This is what we call our life section.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going first because I've done a lot of things happening in my life recently.
Indeed.
Last weekend, me and our friend, as we mentioned earlier, Pacamac, we went to a
place called... The anime person?
Yes, he's the anime freak.
Yep. And the artist. Of course,
he's an artist.
For the record now, we are good friends with the famous Pacamac. If anyone's listening to this in 20 years' time, why the hell they would be doing that, I don't know. And he's some famous artist and he's rich. Pacamac, you know, we're plugging you here. You know, you owe us some money still.
Anyway, moving on. We and Pacamac went to Nottingham, which is a city in England.
Yep. And England is in the United Kingdom. United Kingdom is in Europe.
Yes.
Europe is to the east of America.
Okay. So all you Americans out there who don't actually know where anything is except for American states.
And you may think we're taking the piss, but actually look at the statistics, loads of people in America don't know where the UK is.
We're not actually just taking the mickey out. It is true.
It is true.
A lot of Americans don't actually know where the UK is. So basically, me and Pacamac went up to there with his parents, because neither of us can drive yet. And we went up there for just to do a bit of shopping, right? And apparently, well, not apparently, there is a lot of big anime stores there.
All right.
Okay.
It's like the anime central of the UK.
Well, it's one of them, yes.
Yeah.
And they've got this big shop called Forbidden Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's not just anime and manga, which is Japanese animation for all people who don't know what that is. Japanese artwork similar to something like Pokemon or Dragon Ball Z. I'm sure everyone knows
that's
that.
That's quite sort of tame version of anime,
that's,
really.
That's the tame version. That's
the cartoon,
the censored version, which English and American companies like to show people. Yeah. But there's a lot more.
There is a lot more to it.
So we went to this store called Forbidden Planet, mm-hmm. and I was excited because this is the first shop I've ever seen, which was like me. This is just like my shop.
Yeah,
if
your
I lived,
shop.
If I lived in Nottingham, my paycheck would go in there. Yeah. I wouldn't bother getting the paycheck. It'd go straight to Forbidden
yeah,
Planet.
Yeah, it's like, well, please forward on my paycheck to Forbidden Planet, my account there. Yeah.
Anyway, I went in, and they've got these manga section, and it was so big because the only manga section we've got where we live is in a shop called Otica's, mm-hmm. which I'm not sure if they got in America. Is Otica's in America?
I have no idea. It's part of Waterstones and that sort of thing, but I have no idea.
They had this huge wall full of manga, and I was in heaven.
I can imagine.
Because it was just, Pacamac instantly grabbed about 15 different mangas.
He
actually bought so many, he was having trouble carrying them. And one of the shop people behind this hill said, "Do you just want to leave them around here, mate?" He says, "Yeah, I'm just going to go get some more." I think he spent about £170.
It's like, would you like a box with that?
I didn't go to such an amazing extent as that. But I did buy 15 mangas, simply because you can't really buy them anywhere else apart from on the internet.
Yeah.
Which is all well and good, but it's different when you buy it from a shop.
Yeah, obviously, it's always really nice going into a bookstore and buying.
I bought some books that I've never seen before, some manga, which I was really pleased with.
It's good. And I think, actually, shops should do bigger manga sections. It's growing.
Oh,
it really is growing here.
I was discussing this with a work colleague earlier, because I work in a library, and we're saying, about a year and a half ago, anywhere in the country, except some really specialist shops, would you ever see anime and manga.
I agree.
But, I mean, I only got into anime about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But ever since then, it's been continually growing in popularity.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it was a very interesting shop. You can't see me rolling my eyes.
No, it was really good and really interesting to see how that works. It always gives a chance to play RDSs because Pacamac.
Long drive to Nottingham.
Yes, and Pacamac nearly threw up. we actually took a sick bag with us and he nearly threw up. We had to stop for him.
Lovely.
That's one of my little stories. Mm-hmm. Next story, I just turned 17.
Indeed.
Whoop me.
Indeed.
I can now drive. Thank you very much.
This is your little birthday present. Your podcast.
My podcast birthday. I can drive. I'm allowed to drive.
Yeah.
For all those people in America, you can drive when you're 17.
Yeah.
In England.
They can drive like when they're 12 or something.
No, it's actually older.
Is it really?
They have to be 18.
I thought it was younger.
No, 18 to drive in America.
Oh, wow.
But I got bought for my birthday a nice moped.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 125 Honda Dylan, which can go about maximum of about 70 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I'm very happy with my bike.
Yep, it's good. My tiny little thing is that finally I have a server back up and running at my house. I've been 3 months or so without a server. It's been not very nice, not being able to download things overnight. I was very unlucky three of my hard drives all died at exactly the same time. So all my working computers stopped working.
Mm.
So I had no storage, lost about 6 gig, 7 gig of downloads, all the movies and things like Welcome to the Scene and all this sort of thing, which are actually amazing episode. Did you see the end of the scene?
I know.
It's like...
Who?
Excuse me?
What? Oh my God.
That was really... I'm going to have to go back and watch the episodes and be like, that's not... It's... What? That's just wrong.
It's good, isn't it?
It's definitely good. Anyway, so it was seriously botched. In fact, I will show you later the fan that I managed to put in it, thanks to some bolts, copious amounts of blue tack, sellotape, and tie rods.
I thought you were going to use Lego.
Yeah, I was going to use Lego and get some little hard drive fans and stick them together and hope for the best. But no, I actually managed to bolt a CPU fan onto the case.
Excellent.
So it runs nice and clean.
Watch job, but it works.
It works.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of our podcast.
Yep.
So, shouts.
Do you want to do any shouts?
We've got some shouts. I have some shouts out to my newfound friends at college.
Indeed.
I'd say hello to Jay. Matt, well done with picking up Alyssa. And hello to the ever-bubbly Emma.
And I will do a few shouts just really to my clan, because they're the only ones I've been talking to much on the web. And obviously there's people at school, but no one will listen. I could do a shout to all of the year 11s that are on work experience, and I wish they would stay there because it's so quiet at school without them.
It's
really nice not having the year 11s because they've been on work experience. B But yeah, shouts out to my clan, shouts to DeFay, the leader of the clan, Inmate, who I've been playing Counter-Strike Source with, and so on, Madkrieg, Fat Matt, Omega, Grange, so yeah. But yeah, so shouts out to all of them.
So shouts. We got some plugs as well. We'd like to plug some websites that we love.
Yep.
I'd like to plug a little site. Well, it's not little, I suppose.
No, it's a big site.
Dig.
It's a huge site. It's just reached 100,000 stories.
100,000 stories. That's
congratulations.
Yes, congratulations to Dig. That's www.digg.com.
Yeah, and we could do our little mock-up of Alex Ulbricht and Kevin Rowe,
digg.com. And that comes from the website dignation.com.
Yeah, which is the podcast that does the
all the top stories on Dignation.
Indeed.
And on the podcast.
Definitely a really, really good listen.
It's hilarious sometimes.
It's not only is it hilarious, it's informative. You know, that it's really great. It's really professionally done. I would say it's actually really professionally done for a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, the quality is also amazing.
And lots of leads and sticking into your computer.
But, check them out at dignation.com, DigNation.com.
And I will do a plug to 4colorrebellion.com. That's color spelled American, so that's the number 4colorrebellion.com. It's a Nintendo... Well, it started out as a Nintendo blog. It was one person doing this little Nintendo blog, and it's turned into... It's got a podcast, forums... You know,
mailbag, voice...
It's a really good source of Nintendo information, basically.
Yeah, anything you need to know about... It's got the latest updates. He's always updating daily. Throughout the day, he's updating brand new news. It's great stuff. So check all those sites out. Really good sites.
And that's about it.
I'd also like to give a plug to our friend Packamap's DeviantArt website, where all his art goes.
It's definitely a great...
Always a great artist.
He's a great artist.
Definitely check it out.
Brilliant up and coming artist.
Yeah,
doing manga and stuff.
He's going to be good. And that's http://// packamac.deviantart.com. And you spell Packamac PACHAMAC.
Yep. And of course, I will put all of these links in with the little blog entry about the podcast so that in case you didn't catch any of those tiny URLs or didn't catch anything, then you can just. Go
check
on the website and click there, and away it goes.
Okay.
I'm Gelada.
I'm Num Sephron.
That's the end of the very first episode of Life in Hex.
Sayonara.